One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The boyhood dream has come true.
All of you, stop to me.
You're about to find out how ugly mankind can really be.
Myself and the clique are gonna dance all over your face. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Oh, it is the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads are on their way to Chicago via Saudi Arabia. We are here via our Ica Pro powered DeLorean off to Purgatory via Bulldog's Meat King restaurant. I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio Tom Campbell. I'm with the mulligan to my O'Hare, the rambunctious Clive Fuck, a.k.a. Jackie Orlando. Jackie, you are looking resplendent today.
I'm happy because the weather's gone crap, which means I can wear all my nice clothes again. So today I'm dressed like your nan.
You do look like my nan every sense of the word.
Yeah, I'm wearing three woolen articles today and I'm very happy.
Isn't it nice to have like this weather again? I've missed it greatly.
Yeah, I hate the summer with a vengeance. So when we had that heat wave the other week, I was just lying there just like, I didn't ask for this. It's September now, I want to eat stew.
This so isn't now, what I asked for, Mother.
Mother, get Michael Fish on the telephone and tell him I am not pleased. But yeah.
Jumper weather is back in full force.
Yes, almost time for big coat weather, which, as we all know, I'm quite fond of.
Have you played the big coat pocket lottery yet?
No, I have not.
Fun game to play, whereby if you haven't worn your winter coat in some time, just have a little rummage in the pockets first and see what you find. See what you left in there last year.
Oh, my hamster. Hello, Neville.
Oh, goodbye, Neville, also. Oh. You may find common things to find are bits of random tissue, half-eaten pack of chewing gum, and, in the best case, a bit of money.
Hey.
Always nice. I've had a fiver in my winter coat pocket last year.
Milky bars were on you last year.
Oh, I tell you what, I rang Alex and said, we eating tonight?
And then rang her back 10 minutes later and you're like, cancel that, I've bought a gold tooth.
Cancel that. I bought five hilariously shaped pegs from Poundland. We haven't even got a clothes dryer. I know, but shush, they were fun.
We can peg other things, like we can peg clothes, the packet of crisps, or peg Pablo's nipples, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then she said, I'll peg you in a minute. I went, hey, steady on, this is a family show. Hey.
bit of blue there.
Bit of blue, but dads. Right. And a bit of red from Monday Night Raw in 1996. That is what we are here to discuss. We are going back to October 28th of 1996. I can tell you number one in the UK charts this week is the Spice Girls. They're back again, baby.
Just so they've climbed back to number one, or is this a new entry?
Brand new one. Say You'll Be There.
Oh, what a tune.
It's the song that they initially wanted to be their debut single.
Which, I don't know, because I think it is a better song than Wannabe, but Wannabe is such a good introduction to the Spice Girls world, to Spice World, that I think is... I think the record label got it right this time.
I think they nailed it, didn't they? I think they did. I think it was a song they wanted to make their first single anyway. And they went with Wannabe instead. And they thought, well, we'll hold off on that one. And I'm glad they did, because here it is. Number one in the US charts is Macarena still. You'll be glad to hear.
It's the end of October. He's doing the Macarena in October.
Very tired people. I mean, I was at a wedding just the other week when Macarena came on. So the energy never dies.
Was it you who put on your copy of the Macarena that you brought with you on CD?
I can neither confirm nor deny that it was my copy of the Macarena. Sleepers is number one in the US box office this week. It's the film we talked about last week. But number one in the UK box office is the movie Dragonheart. Do you remember Dragonheart, Jackie Orlando?
I went to see this in the cinema and I can't remember anything about it. I know Sean Connery is the voice of a dragon.
That's it, yes. He plays Draco, the dragon. So the story of the young sickly King Einon, who was wounded in battle, and in order for him to survive, he was healed by Draco, a dragon played by Sean Connery. Some years later, Bowen, a dragon slayer, encounters Draco, and they team up to form a traveling duo that perform an act whereby he slays the dragon. But the act is only known by themselves. So they'll basically, Draco will fly into places and go, I'm going to get you. And then here comes Bowen. He'll pretend to slay the dragon and they'll make out like bandits for it. Now, from here, Bowen and Draco have to save an entire kingdom from the rule of the now evil King Einon, who is part of Draco, and Draco are part of him. That's from IMDb, that is. I love it. Isn't it a little bit like Shark Tale?
I've never seen Shark Tale.
Whereby he pretends to get mauled by a shark, does Will Smith.
I'm trying to think what other films have done this kind of thing as well. There are a few. It's an old trope, isn't it?
I mean, we do it every week because we're stealing a living, very much like they were in Dragonheart.
I was just down just before we started recording because I got it in my head for some reason that we were recording at 10, and I went back and read the messages, and you clearly said 11, and I signed off on it. So I went downstairs to talk to Sean about taxes and finance. And I ended up just wittering on. I just went, I'm going upstairs now to get paid to witter on rather than doing it here for free.
Well, I'm sure she enjoyed the company.
For the first 20 seconds, yes. And then after that, she was like, bugger off now. I'm having some porridge and doing some accounting. And I was like, okay, see you later.
Oh, bye then. See you later. So those are the big movies from this particular year, the big movies and the movements in the charts as well. On the small screen, we had two TV show debuts, Jackie Orlando. Mm. We had The Crocodile Hunter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Steve Irwin and his wife, Terry, basically bothering crocodiles with hilarious results.
Don't run, Terry. Don't run. Run, Terry. Run. Fantastic TV. It was like Saturday afternoons. It was on, I'm sure, on ITV. And my brother and his mates would have been about 18. And they'd all just like sit on the couch at like 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon watching Steve Irwin be a lunatic. It was brilliant.
Also, the day before this episode of Raw airs, we get the first ever pop-up video on VH1.
No, I was never a VH1 kid, so I'm not aware of the format now.
So basically, they play music videos, normally a lot of older ones, and you get little bits of info about the videos popping up in little pop-up bubbles.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. Okay.
And they just appear there, and it will contain trivia and funny little one-liners about it. Created by Woody Thompson and Tad Lowe, and it premiered this weekend in 1996. It became the highest-rated program on VH1 for a spell, just behind, ironically, behind the music until 1998. I loved it. I thought it was great. It just felt very quirky as a concept, just like a little visual audio commentary of your favorite songs.
See, yeah, as soon as you explain the format, like, I know it very well. I just didn't realize it was a programming block. I just thought they just did that with videos in general. But then saying that, I wasn't watching in 96. I was probably first exposed to it in like the early 2000s. So perhaps they were just like, we're just going to do this for videos throughout the day.
That's probably what it was. Yeah. In the video game world, this is the week that we see Command & Conquer Red Alert. It's a real-time strategy game from the Command & Conquer franchise. Became one of their biggest selling titles. Was never a fan or a player myself, but the historical impact of this game is very much felt even to this day. An incredible bit of video gaming where Allied forces battle an aggressive Soviet Union for control over European mainland. And you could take that control.
Is this the one with Tim Curry in it?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to the one place not ruined by the clutches of capitalism. Spice! Brilliant.
I think Ric Flair would later star in a Command & Conquer game.
Yeah, he is, yeah. Just being Ric Flair. But it's one of those where when you see like late 90s, early 2000s, Ric Flair in the ring against, you know, Triple H and people of the day, you're like, oh, there's just like, you know, an old man who was once in shape. When you take him out of the wrestling world and when you put him in like Command & Conquer and like military fatigues and stuff, you're like, he's a unit. He's massive.
He looks fat. He looks like a big deal when he's dressed like that. He really does. Tell you who else looks surprisingly hench, I discovered this week. Uncle Albert from Only Fools and Horses.
Well, during the war, we all know what he got up to.
Well, I think we know. Yeah, he was clearly doing something to keep him strong, because there was a clip emerged online of him from one episode where he's in like a vest, and everyone went, fucking Ali's hench. Like, you just assume he was always, your mind tells you he was just like a frail old man, but no, he's fucking ripped to shreds, was that boy.
Is that why you think they started putting him in the coat more and more? Because they were just like, we need to hide the fact that he's quite handy with his fists.
I think that it went against what they were trying to sell for the Uncle Albert IP. So whack him in a jumper, sit him in the chair, have him dodder around.
Talking of Uncle Albert, have you watched the trailer for the new series of Frasier yet?
Oh, I have. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it. I don't know if it will be good, but I don't hate it.
I was relieved that Rodders wasn't doing an American accent.
I know, but I was still quite taken aback to see him not playing Rodney, basically.
I wish he was Rodney in it. And I'd love to think that they might even have some fun with that concept by maybe one day having David Jason turn up looking for him.
Or
he has to reveal his dark past as a trotter.
Or I hope we meet his whole family and he's playing his wife and his kids like he did in those creepy WH Smith adverts.
Oh my God. Matthew Gregg on the Classic SmackDown review has raged about those recently. Absolutely raged about them. They received loads of complaints because it just took the piss out of Geordie's.
Oh, I can't remember it being Geordie orientated. I just remember seeing it thinking, oh, that's unsettling, seeing a whole family of Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Nicholas Lyndhurst having sex with himself. There's a lovely image for you tonight.
That was the series of Goodnight, Sweetheart we never needed.
There's one more Only Fools and Horses based banter that I could bring up here. And it's something that I discovered this week. It only went online about a month ago. The unaired pilot for a show called The Kings of Van Nuys. Right? Which is the American version of Only Fools and Horses.
Oh, God almighty.
It's fucking awful.
It doesn't surprise me.
Starring Del and Donnie Trotter.
Okay.
But get this, Grandad, played by Christopher Lloyd. I know. I had mixed emotions about it too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
They had a wheeler dealer sort of gangster mate who'd sort them out with dodgy stuff to sell called Trigger.
Oh.
And I was like, that's not Trigger, you fucking cowards. Hey, it's me, Trigger. Like, no! What are you doing? You idiots.
Oh my God. Right. I was about to say I need to watch that, but I really don't.
No, Misery loves company, and I'd enjoy it if you watched it with me.
Okay.
But anyway, we can't talk about that because we have to go back to 1996 now, where, you know, we have awful stuff that was aired on wrestling television and beyond. And here's Jackie Orlando to comb through Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer, written when Dog Meltzer was merely a glint in a Doberman's eye.
What is all this I've missed with Dog Meltzer? Because
Dave Meltzer has a dog.
I know that much, but I just saw that it was like, it's become like a cultaholic meme about Dog Meltzer. I was like, what?
It's more the fact that in a recent video podcast version of the Observer, Wrestling Observer Live, Dave's chatting and Dog Meltzer just comes and sits next to him.
Mm.
And it's lovely. And Dog Meltzer just looks, just has this look of fed up with your bullshit, Dave.
It'd be great. Be great if the dog was called like Ricky Joshu or something like that.
Ricky Joe Woof. Ricky Joe Chew Your Shoes.
But before Ricky Joe Chew Your Shoes was even conceived, we go back to the Wrestling Observer newsletter dated November 4th, 1996.
Kenta Kabawashi.
Mitsuhawa Moose Spout. But, I have... Usually when I compile my notes from the newsletter, unless it's something monumental happening in another company, I usually lead with the WWF news because we're the WWF podcast as opposed to the WCW podcast. But this week, holy sweet fucking Jesus. I've been saying for months we're in the Attitude Era. You've not been convinced. This week, and especially next week, confirms we are here. Because the October 26th ECW Arena show in Philadelphia had a sellout estimated at 1,350 fans. It is said to have been a hot show. First of all, Chris Candido debuted, pinning Spike Dudley in a very good match. Candido was over huge, although he several times pointed to the stage area where Sonny was, and there were huge chants of Sonny and Tammy, along with chants of Skip is dead. After the match, Chris Candido kissed the ring and did a promo running down the WWF and talking about being there when ECW was first formed, doing a babyface promo, and said he'd help rebuild ECW because it's the shits now turning heel. But that's not the big news. Chris Candido was in the ECW arena that week, as was, there was an interview segment with Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, who did He did commentary on the match of Taz beating Little Guido. Taz said that Angle was the best amateur wrestler in the world, but that he was going to show him the difference between the best amateur wrestler and the best professional wrestler. Okay. So then ECW World Champion Sandman wrestles and he beats Too Cold Scorpio. And then after the match, Tyler Fullington turns up dressed like Sandman and they start having a hug. But now here comes Raven, Stevie Richards, Blue Meanie, Supernova and Laurie Fullington. And they crucified him.
Oh, it's this one.
Yeah, they cut open his eye, crucified him on a cross that apparently the Sandman himself built because he was a joiner in his 9 to 5. Put a barbed wire crown on, and Dave is put here. Apparently, this angle was even too extreme for ECW because after the intermission, Raven came out of character, said he was Scott Levy, apologised to anyone he may have offended for what happened. From what Dave was told, Kurt Angle backstage was really upset about it, thinking it might ruin his image and feeling double-crossed about being there, and there were some fans who freaked out about it. It's doubtful Kurt Angle will return. So, one of the most notorious and infamous moments in ECW history.
Bloody hell. Imagine had they not done that angle. Oh, we would have seen Angle on ECW television.
Imagine Kurt Angle versus Prime Taz. But we've been, it feels like we've been alluding to this for months because obviously there's been chatter in the newsletter about Kurt Angle contemplating professional wrestling and this, that and the other, and we've been like, oh, he'll end up in the WWF after a brief stop in Paul Heyman's house. So Kurt Angle's not signing with ECW anytime soon.
And do you know what? I think even had that not happened, something else would have happened.
Yeah.
That would have put Kurt Angle off completely.
Yeah, he would have seen like Tommy Dreamer, you know, bleeding buckets or someone on fire or Mike Awesome just being like, I'm going to just drop someone on concrete. Yeah, it's saying that. Mike Awesome's not going to be there properly for 3 years, but still, he could sense it. He's clairvoyant.
He's got your clairvoyant powers, clearly.
Exactly, yeah. Me and Kurt, we communicate often. I'm just like, how are your legs, Kurt? And he's like, I don't know who you are. Please get out of my head.
What an opening gambit. How are your legs, Kurt?
That's what I say to everyone. Want to see him? How are your legs?
I was about to say, I'm thinking about, I'd love to make a t-shirt for this show, and it's you just doing this with your hands, like one finger on each side of your forehead, and it just says my clairvoyant powers over the top. I want to make it as a t-shirt, but having said that, I now just want to make a t-shirt that just says, how are your legs? Let me know which one you'd buy.
Classic at cultaholic.com.
What a pro, Lee Show, what a pro. What a pro t-shirt as well. We've got, Adam says we need to cut back on the amount of memes and great banter we have because it's simply too hard to keep up with the law.
Has he actually?
No, he hasn't said that.
I was going to say, I'll challenge him.
Just thought I'd heal him up a bit. So I said, come on, let's go to Bread King with Tom Billington.
And then we'll hop forward. We'll get some, you know, we'll get some Bovril. We'll get the Communist Manifesto, some lugs. We'll ask Kane what he's doing here, and then Dennis Norden will turn up.
Hey, it's nearly Christmas special time.
I was just talking about this with Sean, yeah, saying that I might have to message you and find out when we're planning on doing it.
Oh, I haven't set a date yet, but I reckon if we aim to get something recorded sort of by mid to late November, I'll start writing something at the end of next month.
Okay.
I don't know what yet, but you, there'll be something. There will be a Cultaholic Classic Review Christmas special, which will be so loaded with in-jokes that nobody listening for the first time will be able to handle it for more than 12 seconds.
Yeah, definitely not.
It's a reward for long-suffering fans.
But it's also for us, because whenever we do, you know, we get some crisps, we get some drinks, it's us being arseholes pretending to be Kermit the Frog or whoever, I don't know.
Most of it is just us laughing over my brilliant gags.
I've had a potential idea for what we could do. I'll ping it to you and see what you've got in mind.
Ping it my way, boy. Lovely. Right, meanwhile, in 1996, let's go
back. 1996, right. So one more bit of ECW news. Too Cold Scorpio is finishing up with ECW on November 16th before going full-time with the WWF. So there's been no news of Scorpio signing with WWF, but in this newsletter, it's just like, oh yeah, this has happened. It's like, okay, Dave, did that one just kind of happen last minute? So he's coming in, he'll be flashy, he'll be quite funky, and we'll have to wait and see what he's like.
I don't think we're that far from his debut either. I think the turnaround from him leaving ECW to making his WWF debut is days almost.
Yeah, and one of the most underrated in-ring performers of all time, I'd say, and WWF didn't have a clue what to do with him. So,
I mean, they had a clue. I don't think it was the right idea, but they certainly had an idea.
Yeah. They had an idea which would... I'd say that without Flash Funk, I don't think The Godfather would have worked as well, because I think because obviously, you know, Charles Wright claims that he's involved in that world in real life, but I think because Flash Funk was kind of a pseudo pimp, they're just like, okay, so we tried it this way, it didn't work. Godfather, if you want to go this way and go all in on it, it will work, and it worked in spades. So
embryonic Godfather.
We've got some WWF news. There is a bit on Brian Pillman, but we'll come to that when we talk about him in Raw. So this week, Achim Albrecht should be in the ring within the next few weeks, which would be Brachus, and he's going to be doing house shows with Salvatore Sincere. The two are going to work out their match in the gym. Dave's been told that Albrecht has a tremendous attitude when it comes to wanting to learn, which is the exact opposite of Mark Henry, apparently. Even though a few weeks back, Albrecht blew out his knee and needed it scoped and also tore the pec of Chris Candido as they were working on high spots. Apparently, he's just like, sorry, I'm just green and big. Let's figure it out. And apparently, Mark Henry is just like, you're paying me out the arse. I don't really care.
See, this is always the issue, isn't it, when you've got guaranteed contracts. With some people, they just go, oh, I don't need to bother anymore. I'm getting paid regardless.
which we'll see with WCW with some of the higher talents in the next year or two, unfortunately.
That is a shame. I'm sad that, well, thing is, despite the attitude, Mark Henry will certainly go the distance and Bracus won't.
Oh, yeah, Bracus will go to ECW and get dropped on his head, I think, about five times only.
Without the comfort of a mattress.
Oh, bloody mattress. I was trying to find a way to make Bracus sound like mattress, but it won't work. Mattress. So instead, that which makes a mattress go. So as we've already mentioned, Chris Candido is now back in ECW. He walked out at the recent WWF TV tapings because they didn't have a role for him and wanted him to stay on as a coach to teach Bracus, Mark Henry and The Rock. But at this point in time, Chris Candido's 24 and he's like, I don't want to be a coach at 24. I can still go. No. See you later. So he's gone to ECW and probably All Japan, it's saying. There was an original idea for Candido to do an Eddie Gilbert type gimmick as a tag team partner with Barry Buchanan, who we won't see until the Truth Commission come, unless he appears before then. But the idea has been dropped anyway. Candido apparently is also leaving over heat with Shawn Michaels, because apparently Shawn would get upset at him using hot moves and preliminary matches on house shows, moves which he thought were apparently his domain. So,
oh no.
Shawn, you big bastard. Sonny, even though she did appear at ECW, I think she was just there in the crowd, it sounds like, and he was just like, there's me hot missus, and she was like, hello. She has a lengthy big money contract with WWF. She's staying, although she won't be going on the road tours, and her job will mainly be public appearances, working TV nights and doing the Saturday morning Live Wire. She's toned down the airhead bimbo part of her original role on the Live Wire show and is doing a role more like her real self over the past 2 weeks, according to Dave.
That's good. So, and I think that works better for her.
Yes.
You know, because I think it leans into possibly her becoming more than just, as you say, like a bimbo-esque character. Mm. If she can show that she's got sort of chops elsewhere.
Yeah, because ignoring everything that's happened to, and everything Tammy Sitch has done in the last 25 years since, the character of Sonny, I think, is inherently likable. And she's over. She's massively over. So they might as well just, like, give the people what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Talking of giving the people what they want, Barry Windham and Vader have broken their feet.
They say broken up.
They have. They're just like, we can't do this anymore.
They were my favourite couple.
Oh, imagine that. Power couple, that.
Jesus Christ. Sweaty couple.
Ooh.
Barry Windham and Vader breaking up in a cafe.
So Barry Windham broke his foot at television and Vader broke his foot during the Boy Meets World tapings on October 13th. So they taped a match, Vader versus Jake Roberts, at a WWF show, and they put that in Boy Meets World. So Vader worked the pay-per-view match with Sid on a broken foot, then missed TV in the house shows, and he was scheduled to work main events against Shawn. But, you know, he was out of his broken foot. According to Dave, the original plan was for Vader to beat Sid at Buried Alive and then to beat Michaels for the title at Survivor Series. The plan was changed, but Dave doesn't believe that the broken foot had anything to do with the change in plans. He says, you know, he's speculating now, perhaps Hart coming back and the idea they'll spend from now until Mania building for Hart Michaels. They didn't want them to muddy the waters by switching the title earlier. Perhaps it's something else. According to Dave as well, Vader and Farouk, and it says here, Farouk was supposed to win the Intercontinental title, but he's out of action until November 17th with a badly torn groin. They were both told they had to switch the original plans and not give them the belts because J.J. Dillon was at the meetings where those long-term plans are made. So basically, they're saying, oh, J.J. Dillon was here. He knows the plans, but he's at WCW, so he'll give it away, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, for God's sake, really?
And Dave said, well, if it's a good plan, it doesn't matter if it gets leaked, because if it's a good plan, it's a good plan. If they're changing it, it's probably because they realised it would be a bit crap.
But it's going to get leaked anyway, and then we're reading about it now.
Exactly, yeah. So I think WWF are just trying to save the feelings of Vader and Farouk and not risk a pace thing.
Yeah, that's it. They're just going, oh, no, it's not you, it's us.
Well, talking about it's not you, it's us, Jesus Christ, WWF being arseholes again. On the Live Wire show a few weeks back when Ahmed Johnson was on, A caller rang in, said they were black, a black male, and asked about racism in the WWF, and Ahmed Johnson said there wasn't any. This was a plant, and the black male on the phone was Kevin Dunn.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
And we'll hear stories from Ahmed saying that, you know, he experienced racist abuse while he was in WWF. So I don't know if this is them hearing of it already and trying to nip it in the bud before... Nip it in the bud from the dirt sheets rather than actually doing anything about it, it sounds like.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're solving the problem. They're just sort of addressing the bad PR.
Mm.
Kevin Dunn, oh, God.
I know. So, WCW, we've got some chunky bits.
Then they went. So is wrestling for everybody on the line right now? Is Sophie? Sophie Dunn. Hello, I am a woman from a family. Do you think wrestling is for women like me as well? Yes, Sophia. It is indeed for women as well. Thank you. I must go and iron my cakes. Bye.
I'll iron your cakes at the minute.
She sounded fit.
Jerry Lawler salivating the other end of the phone. So, moving on to WCW. And this is an angle which yourself and Sam Driver will be covering soon. We've just had Halloween Havoc. And at Halloween Havoc, Roddy Piper has turned up.
Mm.
So, details of Piper signing with WCW aren't available, other than the deal was for a combination of doing movies and appearing on WCW TV events and probably some rare pro wrestling matches. Similar to what we've heard recently, WCW's pitch to Bret Hart was like, we'll give you movies, we'll give you wrestling, we'll give you a reduced road schedule, etc., etc. But whereas this sounds like, oh, well, they haven't got Brett, so they've given his deal to Piper. Apparently they were doing both at the same time anyway, so the plan was always to bring in Piper. Vince McMahon found out on the Friday. He didn't find out from Roddy himself. Apparently over the past 7 years there have been numerous attempts by WCW to sign Piper, all of which resulted in Roddy return to the WWF. It almost become an inside joke in the industry that Piper would negotiate with WCW just to get the word out to WWF, which would then bring him back, presumably at an increased rate. People still do it to this day, I think. Did Jericho do it with TNA? I think Edge may have done it. Orton has definitely done it. Smart, why wouldn't you?
Amazing. My fear would be is that they call your bluff on it.
Yeah.
Knowing my luck, it would be like, oh, Vince, yeah, so we're all chatting with Impact Wrestling. They want to bring me in for £1 billion. Vince go, oh, that's great. You should go. Oh, okay. Yep. Bye, well, then.
At this point in 96, Howard Finkel's just tried doing this with Bischoff. Not Howard Finkel, sorry. Mean Gene.
And he's... Yes, I heard this rumor as well.
He's like, oh, Vince is going to bring me back on millions. And Bischoff's gone, is he now? Okay. And Mean Gene was like, he's not really. Can I have a new contract? He's like, yeah, but at a reduced rate. And he's gone, yeah, okay.
Did Mean Gene around this time start the rumor that he'd be joining the New World Order?
Yeah, which we were saying about recently. We were saying about recently that on paper it makes sense, but in practice it would have been awful. So... Roddy Piper's return, his debut in WCW was leaked on Livewire because there was a Jim Ross hotline tease to call the hotline and find out about the wrestling plans of Roddy Piper and if he would sign with a rival organization.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Jim Ross didn't say he'd be debuting a Halloween Havoc because that would cause some people to buy the pay-per-view. So he's just like, yeah, he's going to be in WCW. See you later, Roddy. So there are other... WCW bits. Many within WCW have seen Piper as something of a replacement for Randy Savage, whose contract expires in a few weeks and still hasn't signed. So Savage will take on Hogan at Halloween Havoc, and we'll see how that one pans out. I'm just going through my notes here because I haven't daved this as much as possible. As Dave's put here, it's questionable how much life was really left in Savage since his personal performance of late, both in and out of the ring, has been poor. He says that, you know, Roddy Piper won't go on the road like Randy does. The idea is for him to maybe work 3 or 4 pay-per-view matches a year and do interviews regularly on Nitro, where his name, charisma, and familiarity will solidify WCW's hold on the older audience that controls the Monday ratings. While not in stone, the belief is that Piper will wrestle Hogan at Starrcade. Talking of Hogan, Hogan has recently signed a 3-year deal with WCW, and this just was confirmed 4 days before Halloween Havoc. With Hogan saying he spurned a supposed 5-year offer from the WWF. As we know with Hogan, trust him as far as you can throw him. But NWO Hogan, you're thinking, if you're Vince McMahon, if you're hearing word that, you know, Hogan's potentially going to leave WCW, that you would at least chat with him anyway. But, right, Hogan was claiming to have received a monstrous offer from WWF, said to be $5 million per year on a 5-year deal, so that's $25 million, which would have, theoretically, if you choose to believe the stories, started with a surprise appearance, winning the Royal Rumble, and leading to another WWF title reign as a heel.
Oh my God.
So
fuck everything else off. Hogan's number one.
Yeah. So instead he'll stay with WCW, where fuck everything else off, Hogan's number one. And as we just mentioned Gene Okerlund as well, he is scheduled to return on October 28th Nitro. The two sides still haven't reached a contract agreement. Dave believes the deal with Mean Gene is he's been offered around 180 grand to work 5 dates per month. So that's 1 pay-per-view and 4 Nitros, and would have no office or hotline duties. So easy schedule for Mean Gene. Money for... I love Mean Gene Okerlund. Probably the best to ever do it in that backstage capacity. But 180 grand a year is monstrous money in 1996.
You're cutting in and out a bit there, Jackie Orlando. I'm sorry to report.
Oh, bollocks. Yeah, it did say that my internet was a bit poo. Let me just...
Is that what it came up as? Your internet is a bit poo.
It's a bit poo right now. Let me just... change over. I might jump out and in again, so see you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Ah, bollocks.
I'll just wait here.
That should be okay. Is that okay?
I think so. You haven't cut out yet.
Lovely. Okay. That should be all right.
There we go.
So yeah, WCW have offered Mean Gene 180 grand a year to work 5 dates per month, 1 pay-per-view, 4 Nitros, no office, no hotline duties. 180 grand a year in 1996 is amazing.
That's so good. And he was upset that it was less.
Apparently so. And I love Mean Gene Okerlund, but is he worth 180 grand a year? So,
oh, that's a good question. I found him quite... a mixed bag on WCW, watching Nitro every week. I think sometimes he very much adds to the scene. I feel a lot of the time he chews it. And it's... Would you put someone else in there? I mean, the argument is, like, WWF, WWE went through a spate of having backstage interviewers that literally just had nothing about them. Just generic boards of people that held a mic and just said, "You're having a match." And that's it. And that was it. Like, I think you need someone that has a little bit of charisma about them, a little bit of personality about them, and then to work through the process and make sure that the wrestlers are the stars that come out of it. But I feel like Mean Gene, on quite a few occasions, almost tries to outwit and outshine the wrestler. There's a few interviews where, like, the wrestler will say his last line and Gene will get, like, a little quip or a witticism in that puts them down and doesn't add to anything. So he's quite guilty of that, is Mean Gene, and I think that goes against what the show is trying to do. So I don't know. No. I wouldn't pay him 180 grand at this point.
No, I think it's the mixture of what you said about him sometimes going into business for himself ish, getting himself over, but also just the dollar amount of 180 grand a year is loads. Like, so
it's more than some wrestlers on that roster.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
madness.
So we've got one last little bit of news from AAA in Mexico. And shit has hit the fan, apparently. So TV Azteca held a press conference, which had extensive coverage, including on the Evening News, the top-rated talk show in Mexico, covered in all area newspapers nationally. throughout Mexico by Associated Press, as Conan, Rey Mysterio Jr. and the rest of the AAA wrestlers that work for WCW jumped from the group to form their own promotion.
Conan's
been in a bit of a power struggle recently because, as is known, he was, as people say, that the Mexican Hulk Hogan, super draw, one of the biggest of all time in that in Mexico. 1996, the ratings aren't as good as they were in like 93, 94, but Conan's still a big deal, and he's the liaison for getting AAA talents booked in WCW. But Conan in AAA, when the territories he runs, prefers like an ECW style, more kind of blood, gimmicky, crazy show, whereas some of the purists don't like that, so they've split off basically. So the big news from this, though, so Conan's group, it's split into two groups: Promel, own identity and name, with Mascara Año 2000 as the president, traditional lucha libre style, stricter rules, 20 count, etc., etc., etc. Conan's group is Promo Azteca, which we've said, more ECW style in its approach. So they would bring in Americans from WCW, said, and the top names in the group are Conan, Rey Mysterio Jr., Super Kalo, Psicosis, Juventud Guerrera, and Vampiro. So Conan and Vampiro haven't gotten on because they were the two biggest draws in the early 90s in Mexico. But now they've gone, sod it, let's combine our powers. Let's do it. Why not?
Jeez, that's a super force, that is.
Yeah, and it'll be a couple of years until Vampiro makes his way to WCW. My only really exposure to Vampiro was that late 99, 2000 run in WCW. I thought he was really cool at the time. I've never watched any of his stuff from Mexico, but all accounts say that he was just super over. So,
nice.
They've combined forces, and that's all the news this week.
Well, that's a terrifying thought from Mexico. One that's... will change the shape of that, and will that become, what will that show be called?
It doesn't say. It just says Promo Azteca. It's just its own thing, because I know there will be other movements in this, and we know that WWF will eventually incorporate a Lucha Libre show, won't they? Was a Super Astros will come into play at some point. So it seems like there's just so much real estate to go around, Tom.
There is a lot of real estate to go around. But the real estate we are focusing on this is this lovely bit in 1996. This lovely little 1996 number called Monday Night Raw. From October 28th, 1996. Now we know the lay of the landscape in the world of pro wrestling. Let's watch Raw from this particular week. And we get shocking footage to start us off with Steve Austin beating the shit out of Brian Pillman. What's this all about? We'll find out a little bit later on. Bret Hart is in Calgary next to a lovely fireplace. And Steve Austin is in a studio in Stamford looking like someone has just pissed on his cornflakes. We're getting a live tete-a-tete a little later on ahead of their planned match at Survivor Series. This is going to be a very interesting journey to go on with these two tonight.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Plus, Shawn Michaels faces in the main event his old rival, the British Bulldog. Main event, Davey. Main event. Ooh, ooh. Main event, Davey. Main event. Ooh, ooh. He's in the main event.
I'm going to be, not only am I going to be the tag champions, I'm also going to be sexy boy champion as well.
Shawn, if I beat you, I'll become number one sexy boy.
Diana said, well, I gave her a quid to say it, but she says I am. Oh.
I'm going to be in that Playmobil magazine as well. Can't wait to get my knob out. Bulldog gets his knob out. I could do what Sean does, get my knob out in Playmobil.
That's really tickled me.
What? It's the magazine.
It's great. They said if this does well, I'll have an editorial in Duplo Weekly.
I'm building my career like I'm building stickled bricks.
Remember Stickle Bricks?
I do. Anyway, bye. That's my collar.
But we are opening tonight with a debut, kind of, sort of the real Double J. Jesse James is here, out to Alone With My Baby Tonight, the theme music that he sang, as we've discovered over the past few weeks with those tell-all interviews with Jim Johnston. Jesse James on his way to the ring. Vince is putting over the fact that he sang Alone With My Baby Tonight. And also, they show some footage of Desert Storm.
Yeah, which really doesn't go with the character. It's like, oh, here he goes. He's a singing man. He's got, like, music note lights and everything. He's got the full works. And here he is in Iraq. it's like, okay.
It was a weird thing just to chuck in there, whether or not they were worried that people wouldn't truly get behind Jesse James. So now we're the twats if we don't cheer for him because he was in a war.
It's what we call the Lacey Evans effect.
Yeah, and it's always effective. Former WWE star Lacey Evans will prove that.
The only person who will get over with this is John Cena, who never actually served. He just turned up, did some weird crap salute and started wearing camo jorts. And everyone was like, he's a soldier in.
Armed forces. he's facing Salvatore Sincere in his debut. And Sincere and James have a very slow match to start off Monday Night Raw. Jesse James thankfully picks up the pace with a crossbody and a hair pull. And he rocks Sincere with some sort of prototype bulldog, sorry, a road dog sort of shuck and jive style moves. And then back elbows him to the floor. It's a very plodding affair. Jesse James doing Elvis-like dance moves with some of his strikes and then wraps it up with a pump handle slam for the win. Sans the road dog humping. This wasn't the most exciting of debuts, I must say, Jackie Orlando.
No, most of it was just Road Dogg running the ropes for some reason. He was, you can tell he's a Memphis boy who's come straight from Memphis here because he's just doing, it seemed quite dated. Obviously, this is the man who is a better sports entertainer than Bret Hart. They're Jesse James's words, not mine. But even though this wasn't a very good match and Double J didn't look great, his charisma still shined through. And I don't know if that's me knowing what's to come, looking back on it, thinking, oh, it'll be all right, or if this is like me taking this at face value, but this was harmless. It felt like a Superstars match rather than a Raw match, though.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a scintillating debut on Monday night television, but it was what it was. And I guess they had to do it on Raw because they've been telling this story on Raw for weeks. So
yeah,
you had to do it here. We cut to Doc Hendricks, who is running down the Survivor Series card. It's like a picture-in-picture type thing where Doc Hendricks is on the right-hand side of the screen and the Survivor Series card is on the left. And then Steve Austin just completely breaks the fourth wall at this point. This was great. As Doc Hendricks is talking to the camera, all animated and shit, suddenly Steve Austin's head pokes up from the right-hand side of the screen.
And he says, no one cares about eight old farts going into the Hall of Fame. I was like, I haven't heard someone called an old fart in so long.
It was great. It was so, loved it a lot as he was running down who was going to get in the Hall of Fame section. He told Doc Hendricks to get him on the camera and do his goddamn job. And Steve Austin storms off. Austin's just in this studio all day, just in a pissy mood. And it's my favorite Steve Austin.
Yeah, because he's saying that he was fuming because he was like, well, Bret Hart gets to, you know, call in from his home in Calgary. He's like, why did I have to fly in from Texas?
That's a valid point.
Yeah, he's absolutely furious.
Shaken, Doc Hendricks does continue running down the Survivor Series card. We get Mark Mero's Survivor Series team taking on Hunter Hearst Helmsley's Survivor Series team with a low-key mention of, on Mark Mero's team, WWF rookie Rocky Maivia. Very low-key mention of the most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
Yeah, because we saw him briefly last week with his big sideburns, and you and I started breakdancing in our respective studios. But yeah, it's going to be a rough first couple of months, and then it'll get very fucking good, so it's okay.
We're recording this, we're a week ahead, so you'll have heard the latest episode the other day, but we're recording this a few days after The Rock's surprise SmackDown return.
Yeah.
What a moment that was.
While you were all out on the piss in Newcastle.
Oh, I mean, admittedly, I was back home by that point. I was so it was the work summer party in the rain on Friday, and we'd all gone to the pub for the last part of the evening, and Alex joined me, which was lovely. And we got to about half 9, 10 o'clock, and Alex, we chatted with Alex, and she went, "Are you a bit tired?" And I went, "Do you know what? I'm knackered." She went, shall we just sneak off now? I think we told maybe Aidan and his lovely lady Carla that we were going. Yeah. And we said, if anyone asks, we've gone. So we just snuck off. We had a pint at our local and then went to bed.
Not bad at all.
But yeah, then I woke up and then The Rock was there.
Yes.
Not at the party, admittedly, on SmackDown in Denver.
I thought you were going to say in your flat then. Like, wake up. Have you got any pepper army? I'm starving. I'm glad it was a lovely, if not tiring, night, though.
It was a lovely night, had by all. We all we drank the bar dry. That bar has since closed. It wasn't our fault. It was shutting anyway, but we're going to claim that it was our fault.
Oh, was it closed down, has it?
Yeah. His house burnt down. That's been on T-shirt. Now, yeah, it was due to close anyway, so I think it was maybe like the last weekend of business that they had before they shut.
Yeah.
We'll say it was our fault.
Yeah, because I got a message from Pachiti like the day before saying, "You're coming up tomorrow." I was like, "Oh, no." I was like, I was up the other week and I've seen you all, but I was also like, I didn't want to say to him, "I'm straight edge, Adam. I'm not going to get a train for 3 hours to go to the pub." So I was like, no, I did have stuff planned that weekend anyway. I was like, I'm getting some tattoo work, so let me know when the Christmas one's getting sorted and I'll sort travel for that.
Yeah, get up here for the Christmas day. It'll be a lovely time. Austin interrupts once again when he hears Bret Hart is in Calgary, as Doc Hendrick says. Oh, we're going to hear from Bret Hart in Calgary. He's pissed off because he's in WWF HQ, as Atkins was saying. Mm-hmm. And he promises to kick somebody's ass tonight. We cut to Bret Hart, who has Smokey, his cat, on his lap.
He's a great lad, Bret Hart. He's playing with his lovely little cat. It's the only time in his life he's ever looked happy.
Which is amazing when you consider the amount of pussy he got on the road.
Oh, there he is. Although, knowing Bret Hart, I'm surprised he didn't call his cat Bret Hart.
But also, in true keeping with Bret Hart, the cat's called Smokey because he's a grey smoky colour. I'm not saying Bret Hart's boring. No.
He's like, "I don't like all these gimmicks today, so please meet my new cat. He's Cat Hart.
Cat, you know, Hart!
He's a real street shooter. He's a real jam-up guy, and I believe he's going to be a very good cat.
Do you want to say hi? Do you want to say hi, cat? Ooh, meow.
Yep, great.
Meow. Christ. Back to the ring we go, because we're going to have a chat with Bret Hart and Steve Austin in a bit. And oh, I forgot things to say about that. Mark Mero is on the phone during the next match. The match is Crush with Clarence Mason facing Aldo Montoya.
Mm.
I haven't seen Crush on Raw in a little bit, and I must say I forgot he existed. Mark Mera on the blower talking about what happened last week and the screw job, the setup all along from Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mr. Perfect. "He is perfectly pissed off," says Mark Mera. "He plans to pull Perfect's scrawny blonde hair out of his head. And he warns Hunter that he's become the hunted, and at Survivor Series, he's going to get a piece of him." Oh.
I thought this was actually quite good from Mark Mera. It wasn't just bland man with a mustache that he said. He even said the word pissed off on the phone. Which, good. Baby faces can and should be angry rather than just being like, "Oh, silly me, I've been duped again. We'll settle it like we should with rules." No, if you're pissed off, you're pissed off. Great.
I think just because you're positive all the time, it doesn't make you right, and you should be allowed to be a bit trite and arrogant trite and angry and that sort of thing. Aldo, anyway, he has a brief hope spot snuffed out by a heart punch, and Crush wins. Jim Ross called this match already because he's upset that he has to call a preliminary match like Crush versus Aldo Montoya.
Oh.
We saw JR, they asked JR, "Who do you think will win?" And he went, "Well, Crush, obviously."
Did you see the face that Crush was pulling? Where he was doing moves, and then he was pulling the face as if to say, yeah, I'm dead good. But he just looked like he'd stubbed his toe. He was going, cheer me.
He was trying to look angry, but instead looked pained.
Did you hear what, or have you noted down about what Jim Ross was saying about Farouk and Ahmed Johnson?
Yes. So JR reveals on commentary that Clarence Mason is now managing Farouk. I didn't hear him say Ahmed Johnson, though. I might have been mistaken.
Well, he said that Farouk's set to sue Ahmed Johnson, and that's why he's got Clarence.
We can expect big changes, says JR.
Yes. So I did a bit of... I went a little ahead in time because Jim Ross said, okay, he's going to be on Livewire on Saturday and we're going to see some big changes from Farouk. And I went and watched this on YouTube and oh my God. Oh my God, Tom. Yes, the blue helmet is officially gone, I feel. Because on Livewire, they got Ahmed on the phone. Todd Pettengill and Sonny have Ahmed on the phone and, you know, Ahmed does an Ahmed promo. And then in comes Farouk in a leather jacket and a little leather hat on his head with the like green, yellow and red stripes on it. And he calls Ahmed Johnson an Uncle Tom, which is a derogatory term. And the words, Clarence Mason says that they are forming a nation of domination.
Oh, really?
Yes, they officially use the term nation of domination and Farouk is just... He's Farouk now. There was a cute bit though when he walks in, he's like looking at Todd Pettengill like you're an arsehole, but suddenly goes, hi Farouk. And he goes, oh, hello. And they shake hands because obviously they've got a passport. Yeah, this is the start of the nation. So.
Wow. I didn't realize we got that name so quickly.
Yeah. The next Livewire. So a couple of days after this.
Fantastic.
So next... I think Dave was saying that Farouk's expected to be out until the end of November. I don't know if he's back in time for Survivor Series or not. I can't remember, but it seems like it'll be a new and improved Farouk when he does return.
Wonderful.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We get a recap of last week's setup all along between perfect... Oh, I forgot a bit from the first match. I apologize. Flip reverse. So anyway, nope. Crush wins with a heart punch. Aldo didn't stand a chance. Crush is livid with jailbird signs that are in the front row.
Mm.
And Clarence is trying to calm him down, but he gets so cross with it, he attacks a security guard and gets led away. So Clarence Mason might be having to bail Crush out again.
And tell you what, you know, who cares about the match? It was all about the stories being built elsewhere, but the post-match was pretty good. It feels this episode of Raw, more than any other, feels like what Raw will become and what Nitro will do well. It's that unpredictable chaos factor. It's like anything can happen. Is Crush battering security guards? Is Steve Austin having a moan and interrupting other people's sets and stuff like that? It's I like the post-match. It saved the actual segment for me.
The actual match.
A recap of last week's setup all along between Perfect Mero and Helmsley. It was then revealed on WWF Superstars by Perfect that because of his actions, Monsoon has suspended him indefinitely from an in-ring return. Oh, what a great way to get around that Lloyd's of London's insurance deal that you've got, which means you can't wrestle.
Well, I think I don't usually put in kind of ratings information because... To me personally, I don't find it that interesting. Oh, one got a 4.2, the other got a 3.1. Okay. But apparently loads of people who were tuned into Raw were just like, oh, Mr. Perfect's coming back. And as soon as it was made clear that Mr. Perfect wasn't coming back, they all went, well, what's going on Nitro?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Not having any of that. Oh, that's a shame for him. However, he can't wrestle, but he isn't suspended from the Karate Fighters Tournament presented by Milton Bradley.
Hey.
He is in first round action. They're doing a legitimate tournament for the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters sponsorship of Survivor Series. And Phineas Godwin is facing Mr. Perfect in an opening round match. The Pig says it's going to be more fun than Granny's dinner to play Karate Fighters. Wee doggy.
Talking as your nan, Karate Fighters is better than my dinner, so whatever that means.
Mr. Perfect is choosing the Karate Fighter character Headstone, but he says it doesn't really matter who he's going to play as because he'll always win. And you know what? It's true. It genuinely doesn't matter which Karate Fighter you play as. They all do the same thing. They just dress slightly differently. Soz, not Soz Milton Bradley. Commentary on the Karate Fighters match by Carve Albert.
I didn't get this. No.
And I did try and understand it. I'm not one of those podcasts that just goes, I don't get it, so it's obviously shit. So I will, any certain vintage, if you're a classic Raw Review enjoyer, classicacultaholic.com, if you could help us understand this reference, that'd be appreciated. Thank you.
I'm specifically going to appeal to our friends across the pond as well, because I have a feeling it must be some kind of American sportscaster.
Mr. Perfect and Phineas Godwin are fighting in the Karate Fighters Coliseum, which is a Mortal Kombat level if I ever did see one. I love the set that they've got, like this dungeon where they're doing the matches.
It was a dungeon filled with doom.
yeah, just off to the right. You've got the Taskmaster.
And King Curtis IK sat there just like, oh, someone bring me a butty. Haven't moved for a week.
Solomon, my son, my hemorrhoids are fucking awful. it would be if he was sat there covering cobwebs. Oh. Anyway, Mr. Perfect cheats by telling Phineas Godwin that Dolly Parton's behind him, and that allows him to kick his Karate Fighter off his Karate Fighter stand and win the Milton Bradley Tournament open round.
We all know that I am a Karate Fighters aficionado, but if someone said to me, hey, Dolly Parton's there, I'd be like, oh, Dolly, where? So it was a sound tactic.
Sound,
it would have got me.
Sound tactic that would have worked on any hot-blooded person. Next week, Brian Pillman will be live from his home, and Steve Austin interrupts at this point, saying he'll have to go and have a party with the, quote, crippled freak. I'm sure that will be a segment that will just float by and not be... one that goes down in infamy.
Yes, and it is definitely a new generation era segment.
Hey, stop it. Now, from here, we see footage of what has happened to Brian Pillman. They've been teasing it all night. And it's from WWF Superstars. Pillman interviewed Stone Cold Steve Austin about his upcoming match with Bret Hart. And just as Pillman is signing off, describing Steve Austin and the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, Bret Hart, Austin sees red and chop blocks Brian Pillman, still recovering from that leg injury as a result of his car accident. He then takes Brian Pillman's own cane to his leg, taking his leg from under his leg, and then puts a steel chair around the leg of Brian Pillman and stomps on it very aggressively. And this is the night of the first ever Pillmanizing in wrestling history.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the fact that it's still to this day just called Pillmanizing, and it's such a good visual, and I still don't understand how they do it without it hurting. It's one of those where you look at it and you're like, that does look like it would really hurt.
I would assume that if you're the Pillmanize, you'll have your leg in the chair
And I assume that you'll just bear down with all your weight on the chair so the leg doesn't pop up.
Yeah.
So when the guy jumps on there, like, you're bearing down with your weight so the chair, the chair seat can't move anyway.
Yeah.
Or maybe the chair is upside down, so therefore the mechanism would normally flip outwards. Instead, tries to flip down, but it's flipping the canvas, so it doesn't move.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But regardless, this looked class and made Steve Austin look like an absolute killer.
It's great. It was just the most aggressive we've seen Steve Austin. Afterwards, ambulances try and take Brian Pillman away, but Austin stops. I am finished with you. And takes the keys out of the ambulance and chucks them down the road.
Like, fuck off.
Fuck off. He's staying here.
He doesn't get in the ambulance and batter him. He just throws the keys, goes, yeah, sit there, then shithead.
Just leaves him there with a completely shattered leg. Steve Austin is being reprimanded by Vince McMahon for his appalling treatment of his best friend, Brian Pillman. A little nod to the Hollywood Blonde days, which is nice. Steve Austin tells Brian Pillman he should have known, DTA, brother, don't trust anybody. You thought I was your friend. You were the biggest puppet in the world, and I had the strings. He's a cripple with a stupid raspy voice with 33 operations. Who gives a crap about all of that? Vince McMahon is livid as this is going on, and he is desperate for Gorilla Monsoon to take action against Steve Austin. And here, Steve Austin fucking not only pulls the strings, but he fucking pulls the curtain back as well and says, Gorilla Monsoon is just a puppet. You're the one pulling all the strings, Vince McMahon. Why don't you do something? I'll tell you why, because you're a greedy, selfish promoter, and you know Stone Cold and Bret Hart are going to get it on in the biggest match of the decade. You're going to fill your back pocket. I'm going to make a lot of money from this match, but I'd sooner kick his ass for free. Like, yes!
I'm sure, yeah, in the previous few weeks, there's been someone else has kind of alluded to the fact that Vince is the boss, so they are leaning into it more, definitely.
But the way that Austin, like, absolutely doesn't even lean into it, just goes, you're the fucking boss of the company. Stop telling Gorilla to do something. Why don't you do something about it?
Yeah. Don't trust anybody. Stone Cold battering people. Stone Cold saying, Vince McMahon, you're a knobhead. It just warms the cockles of your heart, doesn't it?
So far, this has been absolute fire from Steve Austin ahead of his match with Bret Hart. Right. Yeah. We now cut picture in picture to Bret Hart in Calgary with his two kids on his lap smiling. Austin looks fucking furious with this. Vince asks Bret if he saw what happened to Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. We don't know because Brett is answering, but we could barely hear him over the sound of... And it's one thing that Brett's quiet anyway, but he's now being overpowered by the sound of stripper music playing in the arena. Did you see what happened to Pillman? Well, Vincent, I'll I roared laughing at this because Brett looks so fucking stupid unintentionally. Vince then cuts away, and there we see Sonny in a red number walking down the aisle. What I glean from this, it was a production snafu. They weren't meant to go back to Bret and Austin that quickly. They were meant to have the Sonny match and then come back to it. So there was a miscommunication behind the scenes, which meant that Bret's answer was, they started the bit, but they went, no, we've got to keep going because we're live. Like, we have to just interrupt this.
Yeah.
So, and they did cut, and Vince looked a bit annoyed for a minute or two.
Yeah, because you see Vince stand up instead and he kind of changes it and he's just looking at Sonny and goes, Sonny!
Yeah, he's like, trying to twist it as if, like, oh, she's just come out here to take the spotlight off Bret and Austin and make it all about her. So he's on the fly going, oh, Sonny's coming out here on purpose to do all this.
I've got a little bit from The Observer about Brian Pillman that I alluded to earlier just before we move to the next segment.
Please do.
So The reason he did this segment, the pulmonizing, was he had ankle surgery on October 23rd in Cincinnati once again. So this is writing him out because Pillman's ankle didn't heal properly from the previous surgery. So they had to re-break it and start the healing process from scratch. It will be at least 6 months before he'll be able to wrestle again if it heals properly this time. That's so just, down. Yeah. But, I mean, making, as they always say, chicken salad out of chicken shit. Fuck me. You've got Austin over now as like an absolute mega heel.
You really do. So they've used it. They've used this unfortunate bump in the road for Brian Pillman to just make Steve Austin even more psychotic, which is absolutely the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
100% the right thing to do. So we have a wrestling match now happening, and it's Billy Gunn in a solo action against Freddie Joe Floyd. Billy is making eyes at Sunny throughout this match. He's making it very clear that he still wants to be with her, and also kind of alludes to the fact that they are now back together. Despite the fact that Sonny's going, oh, well, I don't think we are. Like, she's being very coy about it.
But she does say that Billy was her favourite, but she doesn't say, oh, yeah, but I'm back with him. She's just like, oh, well, you know, he's a lovely, lovely lad, isn't he?
Yeah, I feel like he's being friend-zoned quite strongly by Sonny here.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Bart Gunn heads to ringside as Billy is fighting against Freddie Joe Floyd and his feelings for Sonny. And Bart starts arguing with Billy and Sonny at the commentary table. Billy's gone over to almost defend Sonny. And referees have stepped in between the two. Billy is saying, I've got her. I don't need you. You're nothing. And Bart is telling Billy to get in the ring. You get in the ring. I think telling him to concentrate on the match as a tag partner. But Billy doesn't seem that interested in doing that.
Yeah, because they'd had a breakup angle at the Superstars tapings, which I think was shown at the beginning of this match. It was the Guns taking on the New Rockers, and Billy just goes, ah, phooey, and walks out and leaves Bart on his own. So they've split now, basically.
That's them done. Eventually, yeah. Billy does get back into the ring. He sends Freddie Joe Floyd crashing to the outside so he can jawjack a bit more with Bart Gunn, who's being dragged away by referees. This gives Freddie a little moment to capitalize, gets a few shots in on Billy, but tonight it belongs to Billy Gunn. He knocks down Freddie Joe Floyd and hits a top rope leg drop for the 1-2-3. This feels like they're getting Billy Gunn ready for a solo run.
And I like this, you know. The match was nothing special, but like Billy Gunn and Freddie Joe Floyd are both good workers. They did the most of their time. But it's the running thread of this episode of Raw. It felt chaotic. It was just like, here's Bart, and we've got to separate them from the refs with the refs, and Billy's calling them out from the middle of the ring. And it was like, oh, this is quite heated. This is good. I mean, my clairvoyant powers are saying this is, you know, not going to fucking go anywhere. But still, in this moment in time, I really liked it.
We get from there back to Brett and Austin's picture-in-picture. Bless them, they've been waiting there the whole time. Austin staring daggers at Brett on her little monitor off to his right, and Brett just smiling very sweetly. The kids have now gone. He got bored. We've seen Brett's cat. We've seen Brett's kids. We will now just see Brett. I miss the cat. Vince asks Brett what led him to come back to the WWF, and Brett basically said he was always going to come back, but he spent 12 years without a break, and it's taken his toll, which meant I wanted to take some time off. He says that Steve Austin had no sway on his return to the WWF. Austin scoffs at the idea of that being the case. Brett says he doesn't think Austin has what it takes to kick his ass, and he says he's better than ever. Vince says, would it have been a wise move to accept a match with a, quote, lesser talent to shake off the ring rust? Brett says he doesn't care. He wants to accomplish a lot of things in the WWF, and what better way to start than with a match against the best in the WWF right now, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin tells Brett that he'll have to kill him and declares himself the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Brett is very calm and collected, almost bored. He starts talking, saying, everybody thinks I'm going to come back and clean up the World Wrestling Federation. But the fact is, and Vince jumps in, right, cheers, Brett, we've got to go. Bye. Austin kind of screams about it being his house now as they cut back to the ring. Before they cut away from Brett, Austin is livid about being counted down at the end of this section by a producer. So we stay on Austin as he steps away from the interview area and just beats the shit out of a production crew member, trashes a monitor, throws a ladder around, just destroys the studio to end our back and forth between Brett and Austin. Jackie Orlando, your thoughts on the meeting of the minds between Brett and Austin?
Like we've established, Brett isn't comfortable on the mic. He made some all right points through the filter of Bret Hart. The fact that Austin was here made it stronger. I imagine you hated this less than you hated Bret on his own last week because Austin was there to kind of keep it on point. I like the fact that it is the kind of clash of styles of the like absolute apoplectic Austin, the kind of, you know, the sportsman that is Bret Hart. But this was Steve, this feels, we've been saying, you know, the prototype of Steve Austin, first time he hit the stunner, first time he was called Stone Cold, we've marked the first time he said that's the bottom line, Austin 316, etc. This is the first time where it's felt like, okay, we've got Stone Cold Steve Austin now. This one episode has put him over massively. And this was fantastic. He hung with Brett and, you know, beat him on the mic, which isn't hard, but at the same time, it's still Brett Hart. To the average fan, you're just like, oh, God, I don't know who's going to win here, if you know what I mean. So this was class. And then him just, again, the kind of wobbly camera, like this wasn't meant to happen, where Austin starts beating the shit out of some little geek and smashing monitors. Fantastic.
I think a lot of great points there. It is Austin absolutely becoming a superstar in front of our very eyes here. I think he outclassed Brett on the mic here. Like you say, it's not a big thing, but what I also enjoyed was that difference in style where Austin is very animated and angry and Brett Hart is kind of barely in the room. I think because Brett knows that his talking is going to be done in the ring, so he doesn't really put much into this. It feels like Bret Hart is returning. When it comes to like this part of the sports entertainment package, Bret Hart is a bit of man out of time here. It's a time period that now with promos, you get like 10, 15 seconds. It's all about hitting markers and hitting points. And I don't feel like Bret is in it for that. We kind of got the vibe of that last week with his promo. And here again, it just felt like a part of it was, like them, I think a big part of it was the direction. I think they should have had a clear idea of their in and out, and I feel like they were given some freedom, but there should have been a clear point of an out, and I don't think there was. I think Vince should have jumped in at the end of Austin's statement, and you know, before Brett started talking about, I'm here to clean up the world wrestling, and went off on something else completely. I think Vince should have jumped in and gone, all right, Survivor Series, thanks very much, Brett, we'll see you soon. That's where he should have jumped in, because there were two occasions here where Brett was just drowned out and just cut off, and I just think it didn't do Brett any favours.
Yeah, especially because Vince McMahon knows him very well. He's had him for 12 years now. I mean, isn't the thing with Hart that the reason that Brett started wearing sunglasses was because when he first started doing backstage promos with the Hart Foundation, he was uncomfortable. So he just doesn't like being on the mic. He just likes wrestling. So it's just like, if you know that, then yeah, he's one of your biggest stars. Kind of help him out. Don't leave him out there to kind of sink or swim kind of thing.
Yeah, he should have helped him out a bit more there, because I feel like Brett felt a little bit outclassed, a lot outclassed by Steve Austin here. But yeah, they can paint that in a different way when they get to the show. Raw is sponsored by Foot Action, Sega Saturn and the Army. In that order, if you're interested. And here's a
fuck, marry, kill.
Or as they would later go on to be known, Foot King, Video Game King, and Fight King. By its new owner, the British Bulldog, in the main event! Come on, Davey!
Not only Davey Boy, but he was also accompanied by Owen Hart, who had his hair side parted like a little boy.
He did, didn't he? He had a lovely haircut. Like he'd just come from taking a photo with his slammy. Owen's on commentary with his slammy for Bulldog's main event night out against his old rival, Shawn Michaels. We go backstage where Austin's talking shite to a security guard. He's still raging, but back at WWF HQ is Austin. Jerry Lawler jokes that it's Richard Jewell, the guy who alerted the officials to the Olympic bombing in 1996. Weird topical joke, but there it is.
Wow, yeah, of course, yeah.
I had to look at Richard Jewell and see who that was. Like, oh, okay, it's the guy who talked about the bombing. Right, okay, well done. We're told as the match gets underway that Raw is going to be 1 hour earlier next week.
And yes.
Things like that can always do harm to the ratings. Even a slight change of plans do slight harm to the ratings. They're trying to get ahead of it, and they're trying to superload that show. One with a big segment involving Brian Pillman, and one with a major title match, which we'll talk about at the end. Which we do announce. A lot of stalling at the start of this one before Bulldog military press flapjacks. Shawn Michaels, similar move to the one that Crush did in his match earlier on tonight. Damn it, D'Lo. Vince tells us that WWF tells us that police are en route to the WWF studios to apprehend Steve Austin because he's still fucking fighting people back there. Fuck the main event. I want a camera there where Steve Austin's just trashing the offices.
Yeah.
We get a commercial for WWF The Music. This didn't... I wasn't comfortable with this.
No. So it's Freddie Blassie, and he says, okay then, let me see what you've got. And it's a little kid basically doing a drag act of like their favourite superstars. But the first one is like Freddie Blassie saying, let me see what you've got. As this 8-year-old boy is dressed like Shawn Michaels dancing, and he's like, that doesn't look great.
No. And then he moves on and does The Undertaker and Gold Dust. Like, very, you get like a half second beat of him dressed as Gold Dust. Or while Freddie Blassie is watching through the glass.
And then I was laughing my head off because it cuts back to the in-ring action and Vince on commentaries goes, police are on the way to the WWF studios. And I was like, for who? Austin or Freddie? Jesus Christ.
We've apprehended Freddie then. I won't say it.
Just cuts back and they're just tasering him without mercy.
I just wanted to see what he's got. Freddie Blassie's getting his hard drive checked as we speak. He's not. Just watch that segment. You'll get us. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah. We're not saying anything. We're just saying it looked like it could have been something bad.
I doubt Blassie even had a computer. He probably just had notepads full of stuff.
Yeah, he didn't even have a typewriter.
Imagine looking at porn on a typewriter.
Just writes the words boobs a lot and starts chuckling to himself.
Tits. Busters. Back from the break, Bulldog is keeping Michaels at bay. At one point, he counters a crucifix pin with a Samoa drop. Lovely. I doubt Bulldog's been to Samoa. Might have been. A little tease for maybe The Rock's debut.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, why not?
The Samoan's coming in and I'm going to drop him.
And he's asked me if I could smell what he's cooking. I was like, fuck off, no. You can't muscle in a mate if you little bastard.
Smell what I'm cooking, eh? That could be a good catchphrase. Diana, write it down. I've already got the typewriter. There's a piece of paper jammed in it that just says boobs over and over.
Can you taste what Davey Boy's eating? No, that wasn't it.
Can you listen to what I'm looking at? No, fuck.
Can you feel the love tonight? Oh.
Do you see what I see? Michaels lands a desperation flying elbow in the bottom of the ninth on Bulldog King. Michaels dodges a running purse slam and lands a body slam and then a diving elbow. He goes for a sweet cheer music, but Owen jumps out of the commentary table and grabs Sean's leg, and the referee astutely goes, right, that's a DQ straight away. None of this bullshit. Yeah. The tag champs, Owen and Bulldog, get in the ring and start beating up Shawn Michaels. But then, to even the odds, here comes a soaking wet Sid Vicious. Psycho Sid, rather. Soaking, sodden. Honestly.
He's so mad, he's been outside flying a kite in the rain. And he's just like, go on, you bastard.
Is that why he's so wet?
Yeah. He was like, come on, electrocute me, you shit.
He's dripping.
Oh, God. He is literally beef dripping.
Beef dripping, Psycho Sid. Ugh. Jesus Christ. I'm sorry he didn't slip over.
Yeah, he wasn't even like ambling gingerly as well. He went full pelt while covered in piss.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was.
He charges to the ring and helps even the odds. He sends Owen and Bulldog packing. And very similar to the showdown we had with Sean and Sid last week, they start arguing over, like, hey, I'm fine. I don't need you to help me. And there's a little bit of tension between them. Owen smells the tension, so therefore says, hey, you two can't get on, so how about next week? You fight me and Bulldog for the tag team titles. And Bulldog probably goes, what?
What?
Fuck off. They're massive.
But I like the fact, though, Owen sells this well, because then Sid does his big, gormless, happy face. He's like, Sean, we can go for the gold. And they go, all right, yeah, and shake hands. And it cuts back to Owen, and Owen's like, oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah. It seemed like a good idea, but they weren't getting on.
And then Bulldog's just chatting. Wham is just like, oh, shit, Chibowo.
Get out of my house. Stop ringing my wife. You had sex with my wife? No, that's done now. Oh, sorry.
Sid, can I have a play with your kite, please?
Why are you so wet, man? What have you been doing?
You'll catch your death. Get a shawl on or something.
Last time I remember being that wet in public, I was in the shower and I'd forgotten Tuesday was bin day. So I had to run down and quickly put bin out. But I had to dry.
I hurt my knee, and Diana took her a good 4 hours to calm me down.
Just sat on the sofa, just angry. My knee's hurting! I'm wet!
Can I have a cherry Bakewell?
We haven't got any, Dave. Could you go shop and get one? Not now, Dave. I've got to get to work. Oh! What a Bakewell!
This is poo!
This is poo! You don't even love me! Do love you. If you love me, you tell work, fuck off. Go get me a cherry Bakewell. I'll bring you one later. I want one later. Want one now.
Davey, do I have to go get Tom to tell you off? He's watching topless darts. Oh, and you know he doesn't like being interrupted.
Oh, he loves his topless darts. Shit. All right, fine. Leave it. Wish I hadn't married you. What was that?
Nothing.
What did you say? I said, wish I hadn't married you.
Huh?
Don't mean it.
Can we go? I love you.
Can we go to the park when you finish? When I finish, yes. All right.
Can you carry me upstairs so I can watch my Top Cat video, please?
I don't want to watch it down here. I don't want to answer the door. But upstairs, the door goes, I'll just pretend I'm out. if I'm allowed down here, he'll look through the window like he normally does. And he'll see I'm there and he'll go, God, Davey, you lazy bastard. I'll have to answer the door to Uncle John.
I don't like Uncle John. Like... He smells weird. His house burnt down.
He's telling me about Freddy's hard drive. He's writing boobs on typewriters. So don't do that, Diana will see. Where have you gone? Oh, she's gone to work. He just sat there chuntering to himself as Diane's left.
He's just talking to the mirror and he's just like, oh, Diane, you look gorgeous. Oh, no, wait, that's me again.
Oh, that is me. I can't wait to see what I look like in the mirror tomorrow.
Take her back. So this was a good match, wasn't it, Tom? Yeah.
So they had a good match. They had a fun match, this Sean and Bulldog. Yeah. They got a nice chemistry together. They put together a nice little main event. Shawn Michaels gets put over as the hardest working champion in the history of champions.
Yeah.
You know, and
if in doubt, put Michaels versus Bulldog on, it's always going to be good. You're not going to lose viewers, are you?
No. Every week. Just do that every week. It'll be fine.
You again.
You. So thoughts on Raw in general?
Excellent. Because we had, just before we went off the air after the match finished, we saw a little bit more of Steve Austin, didn't we?
Oh, shit. Yes, we did. Yeah. As the show ends, Steve Austin's shenanigans finally catch up with him because he's led out of the WWF studios by the police. Security guards lead him out, and then there's police with the blues and twos lights on, waiting for him, and they're sort of talking to him very calmly. He hasn't been handcuffed yet, but he's certainly in a lot of trouble with the police for being a naughty boy.
And he says once again, he was like, Vince McMahon won't let anything happen to me. He's not even asked.
That's it. And Vince is a bit shocked by that line on commentary. And he sort of, you can hear the reaction in his voice, but he doesn't address it almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's peeled it right back.
But yeah, this was an excellent show. They packed in a lot, and whereas they've done it in previous weeks and it's felt scattergun and like too much, this was a really good balance of all right in ring action. Main event was very good, but like we said, we had what, Jesse James versus Salvatore Sincere, which was eh. But the thread all along was Steve Austin is not happy and something bad's going to happen. And this was the first time he felt like a major star. And as Dave himself put in The Observer, he put, Austin's working really hard to get his character over, and it seems to have broken him out of the pack into a genuine headliner. Good hand in the mid-card, no more, it seems.
No, this is the beginning of the genesis of Stephen Williams, the Stone Cold Steve Austin. It felt like the Steve Austin show, as it should be.
Yeah.
Whilst there was no major panic to get Austin up to Bret Hart's level, I feel like a show like this truly galvanizes that he is and paints him as something that is so different from anything else in the company. Just this psychopathic, arrogant, angry beast who isn't afraid just to flip off authority. And this is the guy that's going to change wrestling. And he already is. Like, this show feels alive because of Steve Austin.
Yeah. But it's even at this point, though, like we've known for a little while since Beware of Dog, Vince McMahon's thought, Austin's good, we can build this guy. I mean, even Vince McMahon on his cockiest day wouldn't have been able to predict that this would become the biggest star in the history of the sport. It's ridiculous, but this was great. This was one of the best Raws we've watched.
It's been good, isn't it? It's been a good one. It's been a good one. All eyes.
What era are you saying now?
New generation.
Are you still saying new generation?
New generation. We're not in the Attitude Era yet. It's still new generation. We have an extra character in it. Like, look, putting Rodney Trotter in Frasier doesn't make it Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah, but this week we had profanity. We've got Stone Cold Steve Austin. We've got Pillmanized. Next week, Pillman will go a bit mad. We've got the Nation of Domination starting. It's there. Because I've looked it up online to see what the general consensus is. And a lot of people say it doesn't become the Attitude Era until Vince gives his speech on Raw. And for me, that's far too late.
Yeah. I want to make a point to say before that, it becomes the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Before that speech. But I think right now, I think this is New Generation 2.0. If anything, I'm not saying Attitude Era yet.
Okay.
Standing by it, damn it. That's stubborn. Good.
Be a man of your convictions and stand by that. I respect that.
I am a convicted man.
But for me, if I was doing a timeline of the Attitude Era, this would be included in it. Mm.
Do you know what? Classic at cultaholic.com. Tell us when the Attitude Era began.
Yeah.
You coward.
Oh, yeah. Let's open it up to the peons. unless they agree with me, in which case they're my close personal friend.
Classic at cultaholic.com. And until we're next back together, he's Brad Atkins on Twitter. I've had Tom Gamble on X. Together, we're at Cultaholic on everything else. Don't forget to join us. Don't check Freddie Blassie's typewriter. And love you, bye.
How many O's and boobs?
As many as you like, Freddie. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.